Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have Julianne Block in the house, who's brought her new film, Three Lives, and she's my first interview of 2020. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone.
Hey, Happy New Year to you. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you got to celebrate 6 hours ahead of me, so that's never fair.
Ah, well, there are others who celebrate ahead of us, so we are just in the middle. Fine with me.
So, I guess before we even start, I want to ask what drew you to this film, because it's very intense.
Personal experiences. I'd say this is one of the films I've actually sat on the story longest. Basically, it's not my story. That's very important to know as well. It's just inspired. No, not inspired. It's actually also the wrong word. But it is about sexual abuse, and that is something which most women I know have a story to tell, and it has happened to them, which is sad enough. And I needed like years to finally kind of do something with this. And at some point, going into this subject was like a self-therapy, really. I mean, the film in itself developed from there, and it's sort of like, it's not written by me. This is also important. It's the male writer, Wolf Peter Arendt. I'm working with him a lot, and it was very important to me as well, like, to have a different perspective, that it doesn't become like a film which is solely my therapy in a way. Like, you know, like, you still want to make a film which is entertaining and where people can actually enjoy it watching. Well, yeah, have an emotional ride. You can also say that.
So at the end of the movie, we sit there and we go through an hour and a half of straight trauma, I can think you can honestly say. I mean, there's a lot of anguish in this film. But you have a scroll at the end that says 94% of all female crew members have been sexually abused.
That's right. That was also the idea. It wasn't my idea. It was the idea of my writer. And since the film deals with this topic, and I also have to say we came up with a story prior me too, so it seems just to be like at the right time. But the thing is, like, the film itself was a lot longer in the making, because I've read somewhere as well, like, someone says, well, obviously films had to come up which kind of like have the same topic, but I think that's not the reason why these films pop up, or like why my film is there. It's because like every woman, or almost every woman, has had such an experience. And if you ask me how many of these women went to the police or like said something about this, zero.
Wow.
So this is because, like, I mean, I can say from my own experience, you're ashamed, you don't want to actually talk about it. And, you know, if you go to the police, most likely, like in my case, I was drunk, like most likely, you know, like you sit on the chair and have to justify your own actions instead of like getting any help. So this is why you don't do anything, and that's like why many of the others don't do anything. And I think like the end panel is also just to bring a little bit more light to the subject. It's not kind of to accuse anyone. It's just kind of like most people are not aware, because like most people never talk about this.
Fair enough. I find your film, I mean, you have I would say this is one of your cheaper films you've done, budget-wise, because, I mean, you have very basic things. You have a basic location, you have three actors, and you have maybe five, but maybe three major ones. And I find a lot of the time, maybe you can help me out here, use landscapes to show us the picture as opposed to telling us the picture with words. Like a water shot over the ocean, like the forest. You let that become a character, the scenery. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Now, was that your plan? Did you feel that you didn't have a lot to work with on the film, or you felt that was going to be your plan the whole way?
Interestingly enough, you were totally right when you say this has like a small cast, and basically location-wise, it's set in the forest, and that was meant to be that way, to have limited resources. Interestingly enough, that was, I think, a higher budget than Eight Remains, which we talked about another time as well. Like, the cast was more expensive, like, there were, like, other things. In any case, we always wanted the forest to be a character, to have, like, a threatening impact. So you can also say something, if you have a traumatizing experience, you're lost in a forest with trees, or, like, you can't see clearly. Whereas, like, if you want to see, or, like, if you look out at the sea, then you can see far. So you know, like there are certain things we used to emphasize on the character's emotional state of mind. At the same time, obviously, like if you have a thriller, you can treat nature as well as like contained space in a way. So it becomes like this huge contained space with various angles, which we try to do in Three Lives.
Did you feel that people come up to you and say this is more like a horror movie?
It depends. Well, our distributor, usually what happens is I personally feel it's more a psychological thriller.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, people like, for sales reasons, to push this into the horror area. So usually it becomes a psychological horror thriller. But my experience is as well, like the distributor we are working with at the moment, they cut a trailer which is kind of emphasizing a slasher element, which is not in the film. And that's bad because you watch the film under false pretenses and then you get upset because you're not getting what you sign up for. Like the poster is a good example. Like our poster features the main lead, but as it is distributed in the US, you have like a hooded ex-slayer with a red background on the poster. There's no hooded ex-slayer. There's no ex in the entire film, as far as I know.
So let's discuss the poster for a second. You're a director. I mean, obviously, you don't have any producing credits behind it. Who is in charge of the poster? Do you ever see the poster again, or just when it shows up online, do you see it?
Well, we deliver. The thing is, I'm producer of the film, but if you hand it over, and it didn't happen to me. I knew the stories, but that was my mistake that I didn't put in the contract that I have to have final say, or that I get like a say in the marketing material, which is normal. I mean, there are a lot of contracts out there where basically the producer, director, producer, whoever is making the contract with the sales agent or distribution company doesn't have a say in trailer and marketing material. And in this case, I delivered two posters, which I think were great. And I delivered a trailer, which I thought is great. I still think it's great. And they said, well, you can't really publish anything online until we have the launch, because we want to have exclusive material for certain reviewers. And then at some point, I got tagged from some random review site with this poster and the trailer they edited. So I've never saw it before. And then it was out in the open. And I was like, okay, well, the trailer kind of hits a nerve, you know, like if it would be a Steven Seagal film, then it would fit. And it's kind of like interesting. I mean, it's not a bad trailer. It's just kind of not my film. And then the second thing is like, but they put the wrong poster up, like I thought. So I thought it's a mistake. I actually wrote them an email saying, like, look, I think like you took the wrong poster. That's not the right poster. It doesn't have anything to do with my film. They never responded to that. And then at some point I realized, oh, that's the poster they actually made. But yeah, like let me tell you from now on, in every single contract I will make distribution-wise, if it's a territory which is important to me, it will contain a note that I need final say, or like something, a veto, right, on the marketing materials. I mean, you can put something in like 24 hours time, because I know that sometimes time is sensitive. So if they're on the market and they need to produce something, eventually, you know, like there's not much time where I can give feedback. So obviously, like, I need to give the feedback fast and can't just sit on it for 3 weeks. But yeah, bad example. A lot of filmmakers have had similar experiences as I did in terms of distribution, or distribution companies who then do their own marketing and market it all wrong. And I think Three Lives, unfortunately, has gone down this route as well.
So do you find it strange, as somebody who's done three or four films, or maybe 10, I don't know, but you've done a lot of work in this business, to miss something that small in a contract?
I've never had this problem. You know, like there are a lot of problems which come at some point the first time. When we talked about this, you know, like when we talked prior to the release, they sounded like super open. So I missed it. That's it. It was stupid. What can I say? So it's but like if there's someone to blame for missing this, it's certainly just me. But and it'll not happen again. I think like I'd say if you make a mistake twice, then you're really silly. But that was the first time. Like, I've never had a distribution company like this where this was happening.
Okay.
So maybe I was just, I mean, now you can ask the question, why didn't you go with the distribution company you have for It Remains, for example? I have to put a lot of own marketing efforts in It Remains. So that is more like an aggregator distributor of sorts. So different, you know, like it's just like a different way of how you treat things more traditionally, like selling like the single territories or more modern launching worldwide VOD and then push it yourself. And there are pros and cons like to every, to all of the different options you have. And I think I just wanted to try something else. So, but yeah, well, this way I will not do again.
Okay, we can go back to your film now. I thought just thought we should go down that rabbit hole because I thought it would be kind of fun. You start off with, I mean, my first major shot, you have a person locked in a cage right off the beginning.
Yep.
Now, how did you get your actors to do that, or how did you build that set? Because it's very dark in there. So, I mean, was that shot on a different place in the forest? Or is there like a cabin or something I missed?
That specific shot in the bunker is actually in a real bunker at the seaside, which is an old GDR bunker. Although it might be even World War II. I don't know right now. Anyway, it's real. And So we just shot in there. So we had we got permission and then we just went in there. And it's interesting. You find these once in a while all over the coastal line, actually off the Baltic Sea. And since the Baltic Sea claims land, they start like to break away. So if there's a cliff, you know, like half of the bunker is lying in the sea. So that's actually, it's just a very cool location in itself. So this is all there.
So your actors had no problem? Okay, off you go, get in the cage. Like that didn't bring back any bad memories or anything? I mean, I always feel weird being locked into something.
No, really. I mean, like, I have to say, also, it's really great that you say this because it's actually like a door cage.
Yes.
It looks so, yeah, it is so flimsy.
Oh.
Then you can just kind of, like, if she would stretch out, like, in all directions, I think the whole thing would just kind of give way. We wanted to have, like, a very sturdy cage, like, something big, but we didn't get one. So, like, someone came up with this door cage, and we were like, oh, this looks so shiny, and, like, it looks so flimsy. But then we changed the sound and we tried to make it darker and obviously it worked.
It did work. No, there's no issues there. You have singing of a rock song at one point. I don't really feel that sets the pace for the film. I kind of thought it was going down a different way.
True. And that is also a thing which is controversial in a way for us. It's her song. In a way. So it's kind of her emotional state of mind. She's angry. And it is, I think it's very difficult to say which direction the film goes for most viewers anyway. Reason being, and I had some people like also commenting on that, that if you have a woman dealing with abuse and it is a thriller, it's usually two options. Number one is the pretty revenge angel type of film, so where the woman is going totally nuts, still looks sexy while doing so, it's just killing people, just killing like the people who did whatever to her. So that's option one, and that is, you know, like that's an easy watch in a way, because basically you can detach yourself from the subject, because you know, like you just focus on the woman going crazy. So there's no reality in this. And the second option is you go like all drama. So it's an internal conflict. So a woman is dealing with her internal trauma, not kind of dragging somebody else, maybe like some female best friend into it. But other than that, like she's dealing with this on her own. So that is also easy to watch because like, let's say as male, like let's say for a male audience really, because then you don't have to deal with the trauma. You're like, maybe you don't even watch the film unless like your girlfriend is asking you to watch it with her. So these two options is what I came across in my research. And I think there's a third option, which is more likely to happen, which is kind of, you are like, well, women are, and actually everyone, it's not just women. You know, like if someone is doing something to you, you are angry, you know, and you might affect your world around you with this anger in a way. And it's very common that we have male protagonists who are kind of dealing with those traumas and putting them on the environment. And that is kind of accepted. You know, like you accept this broken detective type of character who's like evil and good in the same moment, or other characters who are doing something out of revenge, but they are not all sexy and like completely nuts, like with revenge, but you know, like they're still kind of like having a redeeming factor, but usually they are all men. And now like we twisted this, we pushed it around. So now it's a woman, and that is not common.
So that brings you to my question I was going to get to later, but we'll get to it now. You bring out an intensity in this film at all times. And I find, I wrote down, it's the breaking down of everybody. So I want to ask, did you give your actors direction to do that? Did they shoot a scene and you're like, no, you're not intense enough. I need you angrier. I need you to look more Soren.
To be honest, the intensity was easy to achieve because the whole shoot was super intense. We had planned to shoot, like, well, we shot it in the Harz Mountains, and we had the rain of the century 3 days, starting 3 days prior our shooting. What happened was that all our locations we initially kind of wanted to shoot at were flooded, and you see in the film that everyone is wet and miserable, so that's not acted. We all were wet and miserable and full of ticks, and it was so cold. It was August, and you know, like it was so muddy, and we had to look for locations in the morning because we couldn't reach the location we actually wanted to shoot. And then, you know, like we weren't prepared for that weather. So, for example, we didn't have any thermal underwear because it was summer, right? Like we didn't have any thermal underwears for the actors, so they were miserable. And I think like half of the cast ended up at hospital at one point. Like one had like a sting at his hand, and then it was just swelling and looked like a balloon. And I still have a picture of my phone he sent me at some point and said, oh, this is my hand, like I think I need a day off. And my lead character, she had like so many mosquito bites at her leg that they got infected.
Ooh.
And then like she had to go to hospital, and they told her like she can't get me any water for the next day. So we were like, how are we supposed to shoot? Obviously, like she, you know, like first question was, is she fine? But then like we had also like another of the actors ran into like it wasn't anything happening really on set or in the scene, but the thing is like he was running off like from stage, and then he was falling into a rusty wired fence or something, and like his leg was open and just stuff like that. So that made it, I think, easy for everyone to just look miserable.
Yes, they all look miserable all the time, and I have nothing against that. Yes,
they were, but I did have also like I'd say makeup and costume did a brilliant job in kind of making them look dirty and wet and stuff. So that comes on top. So and I really like all the actors. So that is something else. You know, like they did a fantastic job just kind of being miserable. That just came with the project.
So I want us back up. I have everyone looks around covered in dirt all the time in my notes. So that's not – is that just makeup, or is that also the dirt for the hell? Because they're always falling and doing stuff in this. They're always moving. So they must be getting some kind of dirt on them.
Yeah, well, there are 5 different versions of the costumes each, so with different layers of dirt. So most of the dirt you see is actually makeup.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure, because you never know.
They didn't have, also like for continuity purposes, it's really hard. Like, if you know, like you couldn't shoot in sequence, and you need to get to the cleaner clothes if you need to jump back in time, like in your film, right? So this is why this is all staged. It's not real. I mean, like, yeah, they fell into the mud and they might have just some splatter on them and stuff like that. But overall, it's really makeup.
Fair enough. How was working with blood?
Cool. I mean, like there was 1 or 2 effects which didn't work out just for timing issues because like obviously like we were very, it was an intense shoot, and it said like if you have locations trouble as we had with reaching locations, that also means you don't have enough time for certain things and blood effects, for example. Like there was 1 or 2 things I enhanced with VFX after.
Oh, I didn't know that. So really interesting. Fascinating.
Yeah, that's good that you didn't realize.
I did not. I do look for, I'm starting to notice these things. I am trying. How is shooting people hitting each other with items as opposed to punching? Because you have to block that differently.
We had a action coordinator who was helping. So, yeah, that was cool. I mean, like, we rehearsed. They trained. I think that was one of the most fun things for most of them.
And yourself, was that one of the fun things you look forward to as a director?
Yeah, I do, actually, because if I have someone who is being able to choreograph with me, like who is like in this whole action thing. I mean, I do have done action short films in Asia when I was living in Asia prior being back in Germany. And there were three short films I did with the stunt group, and that was so much fun. And they also won, like I know one was runner up for best martial arts sequence in short films on the Action Film Festival, I think in 2010. So that was kind of going a little bit back to my roots as well, in a way.
That's cool. As a director, I found this film, you had to do a lot. I mean, I don't want to say your first two films you sent me were stagnant, but this one's a little more tricky because you do a lot of shots on hills. You do a lot of angle shots. Like, you're not really just standing in one place. So are you hand-helding this, or do you have a lot of help with the DP?
No, I wasn't camera operating. So we had a camera operator. And, like, the thing is, we wanted to make it look like a war film from the aesthetic. So this is why we said also we have everything handheld. Because that's, you know, like usually to emphasize the internal perspective of someone in this struggle. So yeah, but the thing is, like, I wasn't touching the camera. Usually, like, if I have to, if I have to do the framing as well, well, I'm saying what, like, I say what I want, and then obviously, like, I adjust if I don't get what I want. But usually, like, I have a DOP or camera operator doing this.
Okay, I have to ask. You know, why do the bad guys speak French?
Yes.
Why do they? Did you not want them to speak German? Did you not want to just, why French was the choice of language?
Actually, it came up because he's French and bilingual in terms of that, and he just suggested it. That's one thing. But then also we found it fits the characters because we have the background that they were legionnaires, French legion. I mean, French legion is usually what you kind of like look into if you come up with characters who are like mercenaries at some point in their life and come from Europe.
Fair enough.
Why French?
Why are they always smoking?
Well, the actor. It's actually not all of them are smoking. It's this one guy who's smoking all the time. And doesn't. The reason why he's doing this is because he's just doing this. He's doing this on and off set, like, all the time. And we just thought, like, okay, well, if he wants to, let him just smoke. And that's it. You know, it was never written in the script that he's smoking all the time. It's just, like, he's really a character who's running around with his cigar all the time.
So off set, he's having a cigarette. On set, he's having a cigarette. Like, he's a chain smoker. Did he bring enough cigarettes to set for himself?
We never had any issues with no cigarettes. So, yes, we did.
Let's see. Didn't think I was going to ask that question. I always have to ask, the water. Since it's summer, I presume Germany's warm in the summer. I've never been, so I don't know. How warm was the water?
It was freezing cold.
In the summer?
It was like, yeah, like I said, like the weather was so bad. It was such a, you know, like the last two summers were like really, really hot. But that was the summer before and it was like about 12 degrees. And that means it's not really cold, but the thing is, if you are out all day long and you have to be wet and you are in the shade underneath the trees, it can get very awkward.
Okay, I get it. I get it. So the old beat up trailer, did you bring that in or did you guys just find it there or how did that come into effect? Because you're saying you had to change locations a lot.
Well, that one we found prior, and that one was something we were able to stick to in terms of location. We had a ranger who was who's working in this area, and he was kind of like driving me around for a recce, which was super nice. It was also super cost effective for us, I have to say, because he was like, well, he's not a professional location scout, so we didn't have to pay him. And I think for him, it was such a great thing, like, to show us around for a movie that he really enjoyed himself. So he enjoyed, like, he showed us all the secret areas. And I was asking for something like this. And he, like, basically this trailer was something he wanted to get rid of for a long time. But the thing, obviously, like, there's no, they didn't have any government funding or like enough money to get it off, like out of the forest. So the deal was, I could use that and I can also stage an explosion there. But then afterwards, I have to pay a company to get it out of the forest entirely and to just clean it up.
So I was you hit both questions. I'm really impressed. You hit my follow-up question. but I will go into that a bit more. Staging an explosion. How much work is that as a director, or is that always just the explosive expert's job? Because you're on a small production. It's not like you have 10 people doing it.
We had two special effects guys coming for that day doing the explosion, because also you don't want to do anything like this by yourself with fire in the forest, even if it's so wet as it was, you know, it's highly illegal. And they have like the insurance if something happens. So they came and did this, and that is another shot which is highly VFX enhanced.
Well, I noticed that, but I was going to let you have it.
Well, it is. So, I mean,
at the end of the film, you have a sunset shot at the end of the film. Is that to signal a new day is coming?
Yeah.
For everyone.
It is also like, yeah, if you have a sunset, it's always sort of a new time begins, even if it's night or it's a change. You can also say change. I think change works better than new day, because like first it's really night. It's just kind of like it comes to a closure for the lead character.
So you've packaged your film up, it's ready to go, but how long do you spend the CGI on it, working with that, and maybe doing color corrections and things?
It took us 9 months, I think, the entire post, from shooting it until it was ready.
Now, you had a theatrical release in Turkey.
Yeah.
Did you go?
Nope. That was also like... this is the same distributor, right? Like they also are a sales agent, and they sold Turkey. And like, I have a friend who lives there, and she at some point made me aware that it's actually shown in theaters. Obviously I could have figured this out like a tiny little bit after as well. And then like I was figuring out like with IMDb Pro that it was like more than 120 theaters, which we thought is really cool. It was sold for a flat fee. So we are not seeing any revenue from the income of the theatrical release. But on the other hand, that's fine. I mean, I think it's more important that this release happened, because I think that's pretty cool. They used one of my posters. Sorry to have to say this. They used one of our posters, not theirs. And that kind of made us very happy.
You're shooting in the forest. How is catering involved in the forest? Do you have like a campsite set up for everybody, or do you bring your crew in every day from outside location?
We were very, very lucky in that regard. I was looking at the area, and I was looking for a place to stay. So towards, you know, like it's very, it makes your life much easier if you have the entire crew staying in one place and then you just go out and shoot. So I was phoning up hotels and locations where we could potentially get everything. And there was one which was right there where we wanted to shoot on the road, which was closed. So they had really trouble this year with business, because usually there's a huge road passing with all the traffic which comes with it, and that year nothing. And so they really saved our lives. They were then providing the catering. They knew the area inside out. If we couldn't reach a location, they actually were able to tell us where to go. Then they were driving up every day for lunch to wherever we were with their truck and provided lunch. And, you know, like for dinner, we were able to just kind of have dinner then in their hotel, which is also a restaurant. And in the final end, it was like a real win-win situation. So he said, like, we really kind of saved them that year, because as said, like, they didn't have much business and they really saved us. I mean, the final end, like, we were doing everything there. They were kind of like buying booze for us for the evening if we wanted to. Obviously, we paid for it. But anyway, like, we're kind of doing this, washing our clothes, doing everything. So, and for them, it was a very intense experience as well. It was like happy when we were gone, but I think we could come again.
This may be a strange question. You finished wrapping a film you shot in Germany. Do most actors speak English and German, or just straight German, and then their English isn't good? How does that work?
Well, usually, like we were looking for bilingual people in Hawaii, and I had a dialect coach for the German actors, making sure that their English is impeccable or good enough, or kind of looking out for some Germanized versions of it. And then not all of the cast was German. So you have one of the soldiers, actually two of the soldiers, like one is Italian who lives in Los Angeles. The other one is British, and the third one is Swiss. And then you have, like, for the lead character, she's British. So there you go. So it's a mix, really. And then, like, obviously not everyone speaks, like, perfect English, but then I wouldn't cast them for the role.
Okay, but before we get to your favorite part of fun questions, we agreed to do this last time. So I have IMDb pulled up, just so everybody knows, and I have a few comments I want to read to you about your film.
Go ahead.
This is from August 2019. The person, I have wasted a few minutes of my life watching this film. I say because I kept fast-forwarding it. It's a low budget with under-talented wannabes from the director to the last actor.
Boom.
Wow, that's got to hurt.
It does. It really does. I said, like, that was all following the release with the trailer. We think just represent the film properly, and also, like, the poster. So in order to understand this, obviously, like, usually what everyone says, if you make a film, never, ever read reviews. I don't know if everyone is living by this. Like, I definitely don't, so I look into
it. I know you do, so that's why I'm bringing them up. I'm not going to play this game.
And that is, I think, what really, like, well, you can like the film, you can dislike the film, but there are certain things which are not, like, where certain things which are not that bad, or which I think are beyond question. And first of all, if someone says, I fast-forwarded it, and then he kind of complains about everything, I say, well, if you don't watch it properly, I don't think, like, you lost your opportunity to really kind of review it. That's one. And the second thing is, but if you go into watching a film with, like, really false ideas of what you're going to get, obviously I can understand if you're disappointed. So if you want to have a slasher film with someone going and you're, like, an easy entertainment, and then you get this, obviously that's something which kind of is not what you wanted. And if someone gets angry and then they kind of, you know, like, have to pour it out somewhere, I can understand that.
Okay, this one's quite long, but I think you'll like this one. I really enjoyed Three Lives. It's slow-moving, feminist, psychological thriller about the damage unresolved trauma can cause, about the violent consequences of retribution, about the fundamental question how to forgive something that can't be forgiven. Period, finally. It's certainly not an easy watch, but I found it rewarding. This woman goes on for another six paragraphs about it. My take, I'm just going to read the bottom. If you don't get distracted by the haters or by the sensational axe murderer poster that's going around online, there's no axe murder in the entire movie. That's not your run-of-the-mill action flick. Why? Who would market this film as such? And if you sit down and engage with the movie, you'll find Three Lives to be bold, high-quality, independent film with an attitude and a strong message to make you think. I thought you would like that one.
I definitely do.
So
like obviously this is why I read reviews, because once in a while you have one which is really cool and you like it.
I like that one. I thought that was good. I mean, doing this kind of job, I think you have to read reviews. At least I do read reviews of the film a bit, because it also helps me to do a little bit more research. Not that I really pay much attention into them, but I do. So now it's time for your favorite part of the show, fun questions, because I know you've prepped a lot since last time we've talked. So what was the last film you saw in theaters?
The last film I saw in theaters. Honestly, this is really bad. Like, I know. I think I haven't been to watch a film in the theaters. If you want to ask me what is the last film I watched, ask me something like, I know. Which is the last film which was really, really impressive? So can I answer this one?
Of course.
So that was Destroyer with Nicole Kidman. I was super blown away. And I think it fits to say this because basically she is giving, I think, her performance of the century. I wasn't a fan of hers before that, but now I am. And the second thing is I've never seen a female character portraying a broken old detective. and that is what she's doing. And I think this is so awesome. So it fits kind of the bill of what we're talking here, yes. Since it's such a, for me, it is a game changer what she did in this film. So I think it's really great.
The one director that made you want to be a director?
To answer this honestly, I would say it's my friend, Mark Faeser. He's a horror director, and I worked with him, and that is why I actually kind of came to directing in the first place, because I needed a long time to realize I want to be a director.
And your last question, if there's one actor you could work with, who would it be?
It always changes. I think, like, having said this, you know, because I don't have, like, a really specific person. Right now, I think after Destroyer, I would love to meet Nicole Kidman.
She's very tall.
Well, so am I. So I think that's not a problem.
Then you guys are perfect together, yes. Before you go, tell everybody where they can find Three Lives. Amazon Prime, I presume, will be one place.
Amazon Prime, yes. And if you want to watch it without paying anything, because Amazon Prime, you still have to pay. Tubi TV.
Oh. Okay. Thank you for your time as always, and have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.